This is the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper for January 26, 2024. Hello. And welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending January the 26th. Reading today are Heather Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
Richard Stead.
Hello.
And Norma York.
Hello.
And I'm Noel Thorpe Tracy. The headlines today are hospital chiefs grilled over A&E closure, Prime Minister meets shoppers, and Hampshire foster carers not paid. So, may we have the first headline, please, Heather?
Hospital chiefs grilled over A&E closure. Residents voice fears over trust's proposals. Winchester residents pressed Hampshire hospital bosses over the impact of losing the Royal Hampshire County Hospital's accident and emergency department. Hampshire and Isle of Wight Integrated Care Board, the ICB, and Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, HHFT, held a meeting at Week Community Centre to hear from Winchester residents on its proposals. Despite the Trust and ICB explaining that merging some of the services in Winchester and Basingstoke would improve hospital experiences and provide faster and better care, residents continue to fear the loss of Winchester's A&E. John James from Week was turned away at the door due to not having a ticket. The event was fully booked, with 70 people attending, as well as a waiting list of 13. Mr. James, aged 28, a regular hospital visitor, said, "Most of the people using Winchester Hospital are over 60, so how on earth can they be expected to travel to Basingstoke?" Mr. James said, "Some people are already waiting for hours for an ambulance. Is this going to increase under the new proposals?" HHFT announced its plans to invest between £700 million and £900 million across the county into hospital services in November. All three proposed options would see Winchester's A&E department replaced by an urgent treatment centre and a new acute specialist hospital built in Basingstoke. Leaders and clinicians from the Trust and Hampshire ICB, including Dr. Lara Alloway, Dr. Nick Ward, Dr. Dominic Kelly, consultant cardiologist, Dr. Matt Nisbet, ICB board partner for primary care, Dr. Charlotte Hutchins, ICB clinical director, Miss Abide Nighad, consultant obstetrician, and Mrs. Andrea Burgess, ear, nose and throat consultant, have written an open letter which reads, "Some emergency services, such as for strokes, heart attacks and major accidents, are already only provided from one hospital site. Bringing together more specialist services for the most seriously ill patients onto one site would mean we can bring services in line with best practice and national guidelines. Importantly, most daily hospital visits will continue to be provided at Winchester Hospital and at the current Basingstoke Hospital site, as well as Andover, Alton and other locations close to people's homes." The panel at the consultation event said they hope to make a decision by the autumn and begin refurbishing the Royal Hampshire County Hospital before the new hospital is built in 2032. Heidi Coetzee, who suffers with breast cancer, fears future patients won't receive the same quality care as she has if services are centralised. Heidi, aged 55, who lives near Henry Beaufort School, said, "With all the side effects of chemo, you need an A&E on your doorstep. There is no way to being blue-lighted on the M3 will get you to Basingstoke in time." Ginny Ward, aged 64, of Main Road, Littleton, said, "The proposals are disastrous for Winchester residents. It's completely dismantling our acute services and making people take much longer journeys." Chantelle Cousins of Sleepers Hill was there to gain support for her campaign to save the A&E, which she launched 2 years ago. Her petition already has around 14,000 signatures. Chantelle, aged 42, who works as a marketing manager, said, "There are 130,000 residents in the city, 660,000 visitors every year, 8,000 students and 4 housing developments on the table too. It is not safe nor sensible to get rid of our A&E. The consultation is open until midnight on March the 17th. The next Winchester event will be at Hope Church from 2 to 4pm on March the 6th. To comment, go to hampshiretogether.nhs.uk.
Thank you, Heather. And now, Richard, please.
Prime Minister meets shoppers. Prime Minister Rishi Sunak went on walkabout in Winchester High Street during a visit to Hampshire on Friday. He was spotted outside Winchester Bakery with City MP Steve Bryan and Meon Valley MP Flip Drummond. Mr. Sunak spoke to passers-by and posed for selfies with surprised shoppers on a short walk along the High Street. The visit was unannounced and a return for the PM to the city where he was educated at Winchester College in the 90s. It was a short visit, as his car and police escort was shortly afterwards seen driving up Union Street and Durngate towards the M3. Staff at the Winchester Bakery told the Chronicle he ordered an English breakfast tea and a cinnamon swirl. They said he arrived unannounced, which was tricky as only 2 members of staff were working. Earlier he had said it's important that the fabulous green spaces around Winchester are protected from overdevelopment. Mr. Sunak was at the Silver Lake Stadium just outside Eastleigh today to meet the first team squad, coaches and volunteers, with Eastleigh MP Paul Holmes. Eastleigh FC recently had an impressive run in the FA Cup and was just one away from a third round home tie against Manchester United. During the visit, Mr. Sunak spoke to reporters on a wide range of issues. In response to a question on the financial plight of local councils, he said, "The funding councils have received from government has gone up in real terms after inflation every year. On average this year, the total amount of money council have to spend on services has gone up by around 10%. That will vary by council. The government is investing in our local communities through our levelling scheme and High Streets and Towns Fund. It's right that these things are looked into because the debt situation at Eastleigh Borough Council is concerning. Ultimately, it's taxpayers' and residents' money. The council should be held accountable." Mr. Sunak was also asked about increased planning pressure on the Hampshire countryside. He said, "We have to get the balance right. We promised that we would build 1 million homes in this Parliament, and I'm pleased we're on track to deliver that, because young people need to earn their own home, and that is the type of country we want to live in. But it's important those homes are built in the right places, and that's why we have said we are in favour of protecting the Greenbelt and not imposing top-down planning targets on local communities."
Now it's Norma.
Hampshire foster carers not paid. Issues with newly implemented computer system have led to missed payments to foster carers across Hampshire. Normally, foster parents receive a weekly remittance which acts as an allowance for each child in their care. This goes towards food, clothes, activities and other items. In December, Hampshire County Council changed its new computer system, Mosaic, to resolve already existing issues with payments and cut down on their reliance on social workers. However, due to an error during the changeover, several foster parents did not receive payment on Friday, December the 15th, the first Friday after the change, with many more not being paid over the last few weeks. Mary Whitmore from Waterlooville, who has worked as a carer for almost 7 years, told the Chronicle that she is owed approximately £5,000 from Hampshire County Council. She said, I haven't received any payments since the end of October. I have emailed several people and they all say, oh, we'll sort it out. And I know they will eventually, but it's now nearly the middle of January and I've had to dip into my own savings. I think they need to understand that we, as foster carers, have bills to pay. We have the foster children, so we've got uniforms and food and transport. We still have our costs. Mark Hughes, who fosters children with his partner Sarah in Waterlooville, said that they have not received payments for approximately 5 weeks. He said, we're not thinking about leaving fostering, but we've heard that others are. And with a national shortage of foster carers, that is the last thing that anyone wants. A Hampshire County Council spokesperson said, we have recently completed a significant move to a new IT system involving the secure transfer of many thousands of individual items of data. While successful in the main, the move has unfortunately resulted in unforeseen delays in payments to some of the local authorities' foster carers. We are extremely sorry this has occurred. Our foster carers play a huge and an incredible value role in supporting some of the county's most vulnerable children and young people, and we understand how stretched many people's budgets are at this current time. We have teams working around the clock to make any outstanding payments as quickly as possible, and we can confirm that the majority of affected carers received their payments shortly after we were first made aware of the issue. We continue to keep those still waiting payment individually updated.
Thank you. That concludes the headlines for this week. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our free recordings, or if you have a problem with the recordings you have received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229. That's 01962 861 229. This number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. Now we will proceed with the death notices, Christian comment, letters to the editor, Belgarum, first person, letter from Westminster, and editorial comment. And then we'll continue with items of general news. So, here are the death notices. Barrett, Carol Ingrid, peacefully on January the 10th, aged 76 years. Bauer, Lois Mary Isabel, née Cohen, peacefully at home on January the 14th, aged 83. Cherrett, Jean Carroll, peacefully on December the 19th, 2023. Cross, John Lyford, passed away on the 15th of December, 2023, aged 87. Foster, Gail Foster, peacefully on the 24th of December, 2023, aged 78. Green, James Jimmy Green, peacefully on the 13th of January, 2024, aged 89. Green, Nellie Green, on January the 2nd, 2024. Hayward, Jean Prudence Hayward, on January the 6th, aged 90. Herbich, Barak Andrush, on the 19th of January, 2024, aged 85. Johns, Gwendolyn Johns, June, on January the 10th, 2024. Joyce, Philip Anthony John Joyce, on January the 10th, aged 88. Judd, Ernest Charles Ernie Judd, on January the 1st, 2024, aged 89. Lay, Mavis Lay, on January the 14th, 2024, aged 87. Matthews, Christopher James Chris Matthews, on January the 11th, 2024. Morris, Paul, Captain RAPC, retired, on January the 2nd, 2024, aged 89. Podger, Hugh Podger, on January the 16th, aged 94. Reed, Sheila Reed, on January the 8th, 2024. And Wilson, Sylvia Ann Wilson, on January the 6th. Christian comment this week is written by the Reverend Philip Crinks and is read by Heather.
and it's headlined Celebrating Release. 36 years ago, in January 1988, Christians in Britain were marking a grim first anniversary. Terry Waite had been one full year in captivity in Lebanon. He had spent the early 1980s doing extraordinary work, working for the release of hostages in Iran, Libya, and Lebanon. In the first weeks of 1987, he travelled to Beirut again to negotiate with Islamic Jihad organisation over the four Western hostages they were holding. On January 20th, he accepted an invitation to meet the captors of the four. He had been promised safe conduct. But the group broke trust and took him hostage, and he would remain in captivity for 4 years. Then, in November 1991, after negotiations led by the United Nations, Waite was released. After a brief, chaotic appearance in Damascus, he was flown to RAF Akrotiri in Cyprus and on to RAF Lynham. The scenes at Lynham were extraordinary. It's worth watching the ITN coverage, which is still on YouTube. The world's press were gathered, the great and the good were assembled. Waite, who could hardly walk after spending years in shackles, was greeted by his former boss, Archbishop Runcie, and by the new Archbishop, George Carey. He made an emotional speech to the media, supporters, and the RAF service men and women who had helped with his return. Then he was reunited with his family and taken away to be cared for in the RAF clinic at Lynham. On the following Sunday, the Archbishop asked that church bells be rung to celebrate Waite's safe return. At St. Michael's Church in Lynham, Wootton Batters, six bell ringers ascended their tower and rang a 45-minute quarter peal. At the end, they were surprised to hear a loud knocking on the locked door of the church. In the porch were Terry Waite and his wife. Waite thanked the ringers and wrote in the visitor's book of the church, "This is the first English church I visited on my return from Lebanon. It is good to be home again." And that's the heart of the Christian message. It is good to be home again. It is good to be safe again. It is time to celebrate. We use the language of ransom to describe the way we find safety and salvation in the Lord. In the visions of Revelation, this is what the heavenly choir sing to the Lamb. "With your blood you ransomed for God saints from every tribe and language and people and nation." When the church bells ring, when we have the opportunity to gather for worship and praise, this is what we celebrate. Jesus has come to offer us the way of salvation, safety for our lives, our families, our workplaces, our community, our nation. He has taught the way. He has called us to him. He offered his own lifeblood so that all our falling short, however great, will still not be an obstacle to right relationship with the Lord. When we were still far off, God met us in his Son and brought us home. Dying and living, Christ declared God's love, gave us grace, and opened the gate of glory. "It is good to be home again," the Reverend Philip Crinks.
There are 14 letters this week, beginning with one read by Richard.
Pat Brockway writes, "Chris Memories. I would like to echo the words of Robin Atkins in his tribute to Chris." That's Chronicle Letters, January 4th. Chris Pines was indeed an exceptional man, who achieved much in his life. I had the pleasure of being a member of his fundraising committee when he was mayor, 2007-08. We were a very good mix of people with varying interests and political persuasions. He was the same cheery character with everyone, everywhere. His interests were wide-ranging. I believe he had quite a large collection of porcelain, and he was an expert on wild flowers, especially orchids, which I think speaks volumes for him. We are glad that his hard work, intelligence and personality were rewarded with an honorary fellowship from Winchester University, which was awarded in 2013. He spoke in the cathedral with confidence and sincerity. Many will remember him fondly from his teaching days, those as a city councillor, and all he did in more recent years. That was by Pat Brockway, Springvale Road, Kingsworthy.
And Michael Turner writes, child safety. Hampshire County Council is reported to be planning to axe 26 out of the total of 184 school crossing patrols in a bid to save a relatively paltry sum of a mere £1.1 million to reduce its shortfall of £132 million, chronicled January the 18th. However, it's apparently also considering measures to ensure ongoing child safety, which may include changes to roads, signs and speed limits, or installing traffic lights. Each or all of these may or may not be an adequate replacement for the human patrols. As campaigners against the measures have complained, just one preventable child injury could have a tragic and enormous impact on many people. But in addition, here, bearing in mind a recent relatively minor change to one junction involved an eye-watering cost for the slight improvement produced, it would be instructive to know the cost of the reconstruction aspects, plus the cost of the back office planning organisation to arrive at a real-life assessment of the savings achieved. And that was by Michael Turner of Boyne Mead Road, Kingsworthy.
And we have another letter that says, Not Wanted, by Julia Stahl. Bushfield is a 42-acre plot on the outskirts of Winchester, between the Sainsbury Badger Farm Road and St Cross Road, owned by the church commissioners. For the last 50 years, the site has been naturally rewilding and is a haven for wildlife and for local people who use it for walking. At the end of October, the church commissioners submitted an application for a business park. The deadline for making comments about the outline planning application was at the beginning of December 2023. And on the Winchester Planning website, everyone can view the huge number of objections from the public: the South Downs National Park Authority, Hampshire Highways, Winchester Action on the Climate Crisis, Friends of the Earth, Extinction Rebellion, the Green Party, and many others. I think it's fair to say that the development is not wanted by local people and raises serious concerns. Just one example is that the developers estimated more than 4,000 car trips per day on average along Badger Farm Road. Considering that the land is owned by the church commissioners, I hope that our new Bishop of Winchester will get engaged. The Diocese of Winchester does not own the land. However, they can have an opinion on whether it is the right use of land, considering the Church of England goal to achieve carbon net zero by 2030. I was pleased to read in the Church Times on January the 19th that our new Bishop of Winchester has climate change at the top of his agenda. He said that the struggle to combat climate change and violations of religious freedom are linked, because they both spring from a common concern for the common good. Bushfield is therefore the ideal opportunity to engage with the common good on a very local level. I contacted his office to ask for an appointment to discuss how the Diocese of Winchester can get involved with local groups and the community. I am still waiting for a response. Julia Stahl, Oliver's Battery Road South, Oliver's Battery, Winchester.
David Melton writes, Fox Vermin. Mike Sherwood's letter about a fox as a beautiful creature from the Chronicle, January the 11th, reminded me of my uncle, who used to be a free-range poultry farmer in Norfolk. The local foxes didn't just steal the odd chicken, which he wouldn't really have minded too much about. They would occasionally get into the hen house and cause mayhem, killing and injuring many chickens. So he kept guns in his kitchen. When he saw them, he would go after the varmint without hesitation. That was from David Melton, Vernon Road, Week, Winchester.
Futile debates. Pity poor Alexander Cole, who was fined for speeding at 24 miles an hour in Acton, chronicled January the 18th. Living in Winchester, he presumably thought that any 20-mile-an-hour sign he might have noticed were purely decorative. He was fined £200, or £50 for every mile over the permitted 20. If Hampshire County Council charged Winchester's drivers that, there would be no hole in their budget and no need to sack lollipop ladies, fear over cutting the school crossing patrols, chronicle page 8. When we read in the same paper, page 41, ways to setting up 20-mile-an-hour speed limits could change. But still, you report, even if the proposed change's speed limit is considered justified, there is no guarantee that it will be implemented. You don't say whether or not it is implemented, it will then be enforced. Experience so far with 5 penalties served by Hampshire police in 6 years says it won't. Yet, like bald men famously arguing over a comb, still our readers continue to sit in committee rooms, no doubt claiming expenses for attending futile debates. And that's from Judith Martin of Romsey Road, Winchester.
I've got another letter complaining. Philip Hutchinson is writing that the leisure centre is a missed opportunity. I'm sorry. I am writing to express concerns about the management of the River Park Leisure Centre under the current Lib Dem administration. This facility, once a thriving community hub, now lies unused, symbolising a missed opportunity and financial loss for Winchester. The core issue stems from a failed contract negotiation with the University of Southampton, leading to the site's underutilisation. This not only signifies a loss in potential revenue, but it also highlights a lapse in strategic decision-making within the council. The derelict state of the River Park Leisure Centre raises questions about the council's asset management and planning. Such oversight impacts the community's well-being and economic vitality. Residents and local business owners seek increased transparency and strategic foresight in council operations, especially in areas impacting finance and community welfare. I urge the council to re-evaluate its practices to better manage and maximise city assets. Thank you for considering this matter. I look forward to seeing constructive changes. Philip Hutchinson, St Swithin Street, Winchester.
And I have a letter that follows on from comments on the sports facilities. This is from Andrew James, and he writes, Pit Scheme. I have just read the letter regarding additional sports facilities in Winchester and agree it would be great to have them all for all sports, but not at the price of a 30-year-old golf course. This current facility offers a means of both physical and mental support for a wide range of people from all walks of life and offers facilities for all ages. On top of this, there is an abundance of wildlife that would be driven out by building anything on such an open space. We have the new sports complex in Bar End, tennis club, cricket, football and rugby grounds, 3 bowling clubs, etc., etc. Why destroy well-used and well-managed green spaces in and around Winchester, but utilise brownfield sites for building more sports facilities, please? A wonderful opportunity, I think not. That was from Andrew James, St Anne's Close, Badger Farm.
Some civic ideas. Delighted to read that Winchester City Council has won the silver accreditation from the Carbon Literacy Trust. I suspect the courage was, course, was compulsory, but unfortunately you will not change the climate in Winchester, let alone the world. So hang your certificates on the wall and get on with your actual jobs, which is sorting out the problems of the city. Here's a few ideas to get you going. River Park, struggling businesses, keeping Andover Road, traffic jams, bottle recycling, potholes, city unfriendly planning applications, antisocial behaviour, and scrapping the evening, overnight and Sunday parking charges. You know it makes sense. On a more positive note, I would like to thank the team who removed the large fallen tree in Romsey Road so quickly, and the bin men who cheerfully cleared up the Christmas backlog. And that was from Ted Hart, Maitrey Close, Badger's Farm.
Power of the Press, James Freeman writes, just a short note to say a huge thank you to the Hampshire Chronicle for the lovely editorial on January the 4th on our running day. Our members were delighted and indeed touched by it. The coverage was fantastic, and I have been bowled over by the wonderful support that the Hampshire Chronicle has provided in its various forms for our charity. It has helped us hugely. Thank you. The acid test of the effectiveness of the publicity for me was driving the King Alfred No. 9 service from Crawley, arriving at Dean Lane corner and picking up 8 people at the stop, all of whom were deliberately waiting for us. Now, the only way they could have known to do this was by reading the Hampshire Chronicle and taking notice of it. So for me, that little campaign has really shown that local papers in the right hands work, which I suspected all along, but I am pleased to have had it so amply demonstrated. James Freeman, Chairman, friend of King Alfred Buses, Winchester.
This is from Peter Rees. Measles emerges. The COVID pandemic may be over, but the UK is on the verge of a highly contagious outbreak of another child-specific illness, which can have irreversible side effects, measles. Although geographically not all located in Hampshire, even though the incidence here is slowly increasing, cases are prevalent in all parts of the UK. One child with the illness can unwittingly infect up to 9 others. 1 in 5 children require hospital treatment. Overall in the UK, 3.4 million children under the age of 16 years have not been vaccinated with the MMR vaccine, that's measles, mumps and rubella. Just 2 doses of this vaccine will provide 99% protection against the viruses. Since COVID, much has been learned about community availability for preventative vaccination. More locations and times are available. All GP practices have been put on alert to provide the MMR vaccination for very young children. Children vaccinated between the age of 1 and 3 years get the maximum benefit for a lifetime. UK parents of children between the age of 6 and 11 who have not had the MMR vaccine are being written to by the NHS to ask them to arrange a GP appointment as a matter of urgency. These will be available for many different places, and these children will be given priority scheduling. This is a serious danger to public health warning. Despite major concerns being given daily by the NHS, the websites of MPs Steve Bryan, Flick Drummond, Caroline Noakes, Suella Braverman, Caroline Dinnage and Penny Mordaunt contain nothing at all about this approaching pandemic. The MMR vaccine is safe. Get it to prevent serious permanent harm to your children. And that came from Peter Rees, Winchester Labour Party, Monarch Way, Winchester.
Apples and pears. Andrea Owen makes a number of cogent points in her letter chronicled January the 11th. I agree that it's not surprising that the new headmaster, Miss Stone, made much of the fact that Winchester College was given the title of South East Independent School of the Year in the Sunday Times 2024 Parent Power Awards. However, it is well worth remembering that the London Independent Schools and those on this, its periphery were not included in the South East region, nor was Winchester's a national award. Andrea is right to point out that it is an overall position in terms of its academic results was 30th in 2023. In the preceding year, it was 50th. When our sons attended college in the late 1990s and in the early years of 2000, the college was consistently in the top three schools nationally for A-level results, with Westminster and St Paul's Boys' School. The DIV system, much praised by the headmaster, existed then too. However, I think that Andrea is mistaken in wanting to compare Winchester College to local sixth form colleges. I have long argued that to do so is like comparing apples and pears, given their relative sizes and the fact that Winchester College is not a local school. Mm-hmm. It recruits nationally and internationally, appealing to parents who can meet the eye-watering fees. Although, to be fair, it has enhanced the bursary system. In recent interview, Miss Stone stated that we don't have to apologise for doing things differently. Where that is the product of a deeply reflective, robust understanding of what is important. As G.K. Chesterton famously said, it is only the secure who are humble. As was Bishop William of Wickham when he founded the College for Poor Scholars. Finally, I want to say that the Chronicle deserves credit for publishing a letter that included a number of criticisms of its reporting. Not all editors would have done so, and that was from Una Stevens, Cliffway, Compton, Winchester.
Sue Halloway writes about a chemical danger. I am interested in reading Kevin Prince's articles on farming. And also, as an inveterate Radio 4 listener, I listen every day to Farming Today. I was disconcerted to read and hear about the regenerative farming proposals. These involve a minimum tillage of the land and direct drilling into the previously cropped land, and that's a good thing, as it retains the structure of the soil and does not compress the land to such a degree. However, in parallel with this, the land is treated with glyphosate. Kevin Prince in his article says that glyphosate is stated by its manufacturers not to be a persistent chemical, as it breaks down after killing any remaining cover crop. Glyphosate had been sold to domestic gardeners as Roundup, manufactured by Monsanto, which is now owned by Bayer. However, Roundup has now been banned for sale to domestic gardeners, and on the label it states not to be used near water or food. Roundup is an organophosphate. The World Health Organization has upgraded glyphosate as carcinogenic. Really? And we allow food providers to put this on their land. So how happy should we be to buy food produced by these farmers? As an addendum, Monsanto's history does not make happy reading. They were responsible for manufacturing in the past DDT, BCB's Agent Orange, and genetically modified seed for crops. Shall we now all demand to buy organic food only? Sue Halloway, Lower Chase Road, Swanmore, Bishop's Waltham.
Peter Innes writes, idiotic proposal. Many years ago, I asked my county councillor whether something might be done about traffic speeds in Church Lane, Kingsworthy, round the curves at the school entrance. Answer, nothing will happen until someone is killed. Here we go again. Now the proposal is that the school crossing patrol should be cut. In the Chronicle, January the 18th. The saving to the County Council annual budget would be apparently £1.1 million for 28 locations. That is £42,000 each. Is the increased risk to someone, probably a child, worth so little? This idiotic proposal must be dropped. This comes from Peter Innes, Nation Hill, Headbourne Worthy.
And finally, not a long letter. Table congestion. I would like to draw readers' attention to the congestion of tables on Jury Street in Winchester, which reduces the width of the thoroughfare for pedestrians to just 3 feet. Should this be allowed? And that was from Stephen Percy, Easton, Winchester.
Thank you. And thanks to all the correspondents. You can contact the Hampshire Chronicle at any time by writing to 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO238AL, or by phone on 01962 860836. Now, Heather has Belgarum, an alternative look at the news.
It was a complete shock, is the headline. A large section of a 100-year-old wall has collapsed in Winchester. The wall at St John's Mead on Beggars Lane fell down late at night on Saturday, January the 20th. Due to the collapse, one lane on the road was partially blocked. No one is thought to have been walking in the vicinity when it collapsed. Nick Fraser, who owns the property, told the Chronicle it came down at about 2 or 3 in the morning. I didn't actually hear it. The council came down and they brought a digger or something and they cleared it all back as it had fallen across the pavement on the other side of the road. It was a complete shock and a real pain in the neck. I've been in touch with the insurance company this morning and we're still waiting for them to get back. Mr. Fraser said he is unsure what caused the wall to collapse, saying he believes it to have been due to the recent cold and rainy weather and the age of the wall. Barbara Miller, who lives across the road, said that she did not hear the wall collapsing. She said, I woke up at about 6 in the morning and saw flashing lights outside. I thought they were resurfacing the road at first. It's such a shame it collapsed, as it's such an old wall. It must have been moisture or something. I've always wanted to see behind the blue door in the wall, so that's quite nice. Old rivals cooperate on health is the second heading for Belgarum. Former opponents in Winchester's political scene came together to work on an inquiry into men's health. Councillor Martin Todd, leader of the Winchester City Council, appeared before the Health Select Committee, chaired by Steve Brine, on Tuesday. Mr. Todd, acting in his role as chief executive of the charity Men's Health Forum, said, men's health in Britain's not in too great a shape. Life expectancy is falling. Too many men are dying too young, in many cases from avoidable causes. Mr. Brine said, Martin's been really helpful in putting the inquiry together and gave valuable evidence to my select committee. He'd defeated Mr. Todd at the 2010 general election.
Thanks. And now Norma's going to read this week's first person, which is by Joanna Lewis.
And entitled The Reality of Sunburn. It sounds like a character from a Harry Potter film, I said to the doctor. He cracked a smile that broke free momentarily from his otherwise serious demeanour. Squamous. That word I liked. Carcinoma I was less happy about. It's not life-threatening and we can treat it, he continued. This was not what the poor Duchess of York heard, as we've recently learned. She's being diagnosed with an aggressive form of skin cancer. Melanoma kills 23,000 people in the UK every year. Have you ever got sunburnt? The young GP continued as he typed. I hate the sun, I replied, sideways on. Always hated it as a child. I used to wear a peaked cap to stop freckles spreading across my face. Editor's comment, I was born vain. My tone was slight outrage. The unfairness. Then I realised I was talking utter baloney. As I was blethering on about always being careful, I time-travelled back to the 1980s. That holiday in Crete in the summer of my final year at university. I was lying on the roof of a three-storey apartment for a whole of the last day. I was desperate to get a full tan for the farewell ball. By the evening, I was red raw, unable to bend my legs. I stood for the whole of the return flight, slathered in Greek yogurt. A week later, my backless dress was accessorised with third-degree burns. Now, at least there's a media explosion of the information about why not to do stuff like that, thanks to Fergie's sad announcements. We need to be proactive, as there's no skin cancer in UK screening, although some NHS services providers provide mole mapping for those identified at risk with ultra-fair skin, occupational exposure or genetic predisposition and so on. For the rest of us, it's all about monthly mole hunts to identify any itchy little blighters. We have yet more careful slogans to learn, like your ABCD. Look out for dark patches that are asymmetric, borders that are irregular, colours that vary, and so on. In terms of prevention, the new phrase is slip, slop, slap. Slip on your T-shirt, slop on the sun cream, and slap on a hat. Of course, these will help, but I return to my original point. I've always done this, Doc. Can it be a coincidence that last summer was the hottest on record? No matter how careful you are these days, it is so easy to get burnt. How many of us follow the advice and stay out of the sun between 11 a.m. and 4 p.m. but still get caught? Take last summer. I was super careful in Turkey at the end of July. Queen of the oversized caftan, my floppy hat was so wide I could get wedged in a doorways. But just once, after taking a bit too long to meander along a picturesque quayside, my shoulders looked like a meat rack. No more overseas holidays in hot places for me. Yet even mountainous mid-Wales in September was treacherous for sunburn. There was an unprecedented heat wave. Sheep looked like they needed oxygen, standing motionless in the sparse shade. Leaves were burnt crisp. One reservoir was so low it revealed the remains of ancient dwellings not seen for a millennium. Mm-hmm. We had to abort an attempt to get to atop a ruined castle. It was only a short climb, but the heat was so intense we were forced to retreat, looking like two giant beetroots sweating bullets. In this new book, Fevered Planet, John Vidal explains how diseases and conditions fatal to humans emerge when we harm nature. Mm-hmm. Climate change is the biggest threat to human health in the 21st century, and yet here in Winchester, we have a system of governance that allows gardens, green spaces, and the last urban refuges for nature to be cannibalised by any old developer. Mm. That's the real cancer. That will get us into all in the end.
So now Richard has a letter from Westminster.
Steve Bryan writes, many constituents have contacted me about the challenge of finding an NHS dentist. To be clear, it is by no means a problem for everyone, but if it's a problem for you, it's a problem. And yes, it's a problem for my family too. As chair of the Health Select Committee, your MP is right in the middle of this vexed issue and doing my utmost to press ministers for a comprehensive, sustainable response. Last summer, we published what turned out to be a landmark report, setting out, based on the evidence we received, what the government should do. That report was described by the British Dental Association as an instruction manual to save NHS dentistry, and ministers responded to it just before Christmas. My committee concluded that NHS dentistry is facing a crisis of access, resulting in a worrying decline in oral health, and we challenged the new Secretary of State to set out how she intends to realise the laudable ambition that everyone who needs one should have access to an NHS dentist. Earlier this month, I spoke in a high-profile debate in the Commons about the issue and didn't pull my punches. On the contract dentists have with the NHS, which is critical to why so many are leaving, I recognise that the government has taken action. Some initial changes were made to the dental contract in 2022, and we have assurance of further fundamental reform, but this has to represent a move away from the current system known as units of dental activity in favour of a contract which provides financial incentives for seeing new patients and those with greater dental need. Basically, one that prioritises prevention and person-centred care. But contract reform alone is unlikely to bring back the dentists who have already left the NHS or are considering leaving. We must urgently provide a compelling incentive to attract new and existing dentists to undertake the NHS work. And we must see the long-promised dental recovery plan, which includes short-term set of actions to help those suffering real pain today and a fully funded pain that brings NHS dentistry back from the edge. You can hear more about this on a dentistry special of my Health and Politics podcast, Prevention is the New Cure, which you can find wherever you get your podcast from. Finally, I wrote last month about plans for a new hospital between Winchester and Basingstoke, near Junction 7, and the implications thereof for the Royal Hampshire. I have spent almost 14 years as your MP, supporting the hospital and the largely excellent work it gives while ensuring and providing safe and sustainable NHS services at an acute trust that has operating across three sites. It's disappointing at this point, but not in the least bit surprising, to see really important debate around the investment of between 700 to 900 million in local health services being dragged into the gutter of partisan misinformation. That doesn't serve anyone, and it frightens the very people who need that least of all. My hope, as the consultation continues, is that everyone involved in local politics will raise their game, at least try to understand the issue, and work together. Winchester deserves nothing less.
And now Heather has the editorial comment.
Important lesson from a 7-year-old. Many congratulations to Loris Prince and her mum Hannah for their walk of the South Downs Way. As we report, mother and daughter strode all the way from Eastbourne to Winchester Cathedral to raise funds for and awareness of the environmental threats to our rivers. The Chronicle does not usually laud the efforts of people who walk the 110 miles, notable though it is. It is quite an achievement, especially if you are only 7 years of age. Too many older people are dismissive of the young, saying they are spending all their time sitting at computers in a self-absorbed world. Well, some are. But Loris smashes that viewpoint. She has a concern for the world, and more important, the determination to do something about it. She knows that her seemingly small steps are actually part of something much stronger.
We salute her, and we look forward to hearing more about her in the future.
Now we have items of general news, starting with one read by Norma.
And this is entitled, Pampered Penguins Visit City Care Home. Winchester Care Home, Brendan Care, St Giles View, recently enjoyed a visit from two special guests, Widget and Pringle. Two Humboldt penguins visited the care home's salon, where they were given a bit of a pampering as well as taking the lift to see residents, relatives and colleagues. It was the first time the penguins had visited St Giles View, but they did pop into Brendan Care Otterbourne Hill just before Christmas. Gillian Buxton, wellbeing coordinator, said, "We were all so looking forward to the visit from the penguins, and they did not disappoint us. We were amazed at the way they hopped into the lift and took all their meeting and greeting in, all in their stride. Our residents and colleagues absolutely adored giving them a hug. Some of our residents who were with us at Park Road met Widget and Pringle two Christmases ago, but enjoyed meeting them again. However, for some of the other residents, this was probably the first time in their lives that they've met a penguin. It is a day none of us will forget for a long time. Thank you to Amazing Animals for bringing them on this visit. Brendan Care St Giles View opened last year. It provides care for 60 residents and is Brendan Care's first care home in Winchester to offer both dementia and nursing care."
From an amazing animal or bird to an amazing child. We're an article about the little girl we heard about in one of the letters. Girls' 100-mile fundraising bid. A little girl cares so much about the state of rivers and wildlife that she has walked more than 100 miles to Winchester. Lois Prince, aged 7, and her mother Hannah, 39, walked the South Downs Way from Eastbourne to raise money for the Ouse and Adur Rivers Trust. Lois is concerned about pollution in rivers and said, "Beavers are my favourite animals, so I want to make them happy by cleaning the rivers." Mother and daughter took 10 days to trek the 110 miles in snowstorms and minus temperatures and finished at Winchester Cathedral last week. The family from Barkham, East Sussex, enjoy walking, paddleboarding and wild swimming in the River Ouse at Barkham Mills and want to use the money raised for river restoration to protect wildlife such as beavers, otters and wild birds. As a way of combating the sewage discharge, pollution and a poor water quality in our rivers, their goal was to walk 100 miles in 10 days, starting in Eastbourne on January the 6th and ending in Winchester on January the 15th. With an original aim of raising £150, the pair have exceeded their target by hundreds of pounds as they hit over £500 on their last day of the walk. Donations have been coming in from friends, family and people they've met along the way, and there is a website for people to go to give money. Hannah said, "Lois has been making home handmade cards and giving them out to people who we've met on our walk. Meeting so many lovely people and having lots of amazing conversation has helped us stay motivated. It's become a social experience." Mind you, there's a marvellous, I think it's a little bit staged photograph, it's beautiful. Miles of fairly flat landscape, very open, narrow footpath, frost covering everything, and all alone, one little girl bravely marching along. "It's been a really fantastic couple of days," said her mother. "After the snow settled, we have had such nice sun, no rain, just cold days. It shows how lovely the South Downs can be if we don't plough and spray everywhere." Help from Lois's father, grandmother Ginny Smith, and little city Sylvia, age 4, she joined them for 2 days, has kept them going with drop-offs, pick-ups from B&Bs and packed lunches along the way. But also the help of Stringy, Lois's cuddly bunny,
has been the mascot of their journey with her toy most of the time, peeping out from Lois's backpack, or looking out from the front of her jumper. And for those who can, the giving page is justgiving.com/page/Lois, L-A-U-R-I-S, Lois, -walks-the-sdw.
And here's one, especially for you, our favourite listeners. Hampshire dog photographer raises £600 for charity. A Winchester dog photographer recently raised £600 for charity with a dog portrait day. Diane Golovitzer of Dogs in Focus Photography donated the funds to the Eastleigh fundraising group for guide dogs. The sessions were 20 minutes and 100% of the £80 fee was given to guide dogs, previously known as Guide Dogs for the Blind. Diane photographed 8 puppies on Saturday, January the 13th. She said, "I've always been passionate about working dogs, and working dogs who make a person's life easier are especially close to my heart. Guide dogs are not only their partner's best friends, they are giving their life back by helping them with the tasks that we take for granted. I'm very thankful to guide dogs, especially for Shona Pickering and David Herbert, for helping me organise this event." A guide dog spokesman said, "We are really grateful to Diane for holding these photography sessions. We rely on donations to continue our life-changing work. Every hour, somebody in the UK starts to lose their sight, and this kind support will allow us to continue to make a vital difference to the lives of people with sight loss. For more details about the charity, visit guidedogs.org.uk.
Second weekend of burst pipe woes. Frustration mounted for residents in the Upper Itchen Valley as they faced a second weekend with intermittent water supply and burst pipes following days of sub-zero temperatures. After a week of low pressure and outages due to the Eastern pumping station failure, residents of Itchen Abbas, Eastern, Martyrworthy, Chilland and other villages woke up Friday morning to discover black ice from 2 burst pipes covering sections of the B3047, posing a dangerous hazard to motorists. According to residents, as the morning traffic got going, the ice was turned to slush and the whole road was covered, making it extremely perilous. A resident of the Itchen Abyss, who didn't want her name shared, said she reported the problem to Southern Water, as did many others, but crews remained absent at the scene for more than 6 hours. Southern Water website acknowledged a major pipe replacement on Chillenham Lane, potentially taking some time. However, no information has been given regarding the burst pipe at Bridget's Lane. Residents says our water bills are not small, and Southern Water like to brag about all the investment they're making into network, but I can't help thinking these problems might have been avoided with more money spent on preventive maintenance. They might also have been less likely to pollute our rivers and seas with raw sewage discharges. A spokesman for Southern Water said, "We are sorry customers in Kingsworthy, Eastern and Martyrworthy have experienced low pressure or no water. Our teams repaired a burst near Martyrworthy on Friday and are continuing to work on another burst in the area today." That was Saturday, January the 20th.
Successful baby study. Hampshire hospitals have helped discover a preventative treatment for the United Kingdom's leading cause of infant hospitalisation. A study at Hampshire Hospital NHS Foundation Trust's Basingstoke and Winchester hospitals, alongside other healthcare providers, looked at how babies can be protected from serious illness due to respiratory syncytial virus, RSV,
infections by giving them a single dose of the antibody nirsevimab. The new treatment can reduce the need for hospital admissions by more than 80%. Following its initial successes, in which Hampshire hospitals featured as one of the highest recruiters to the trial in Wessex, the study has been extended for a further year to help determine the period of protection by the one-off injection. RSV affects 90% of children before the age of two, and while it often causes only mild illnesses, for some babies it can lead to severe lung problems. Adejumoke Awoselila and Lucinda Winkworth, who are the principal investigators, said, "Each year we treat more than 400 babies across our hospitals who are unwell because of RSV infections, with the virus leading cause of hospital admissions among infants in the winter months. So these results look very promising, with nirsevimab reducing the chance of babies getting unwell with RSV infection or needing hospital treatment. We are very pleased to continue our involvement in this exciting and important study."
High Street plans will let it thrive. Winchester City Council has said that it has no concerns about the health of the High Street. The subject was discussed at a full council meeting in response to a question asked by a member of the public. Philip Hutchinson of St Swithin Street asked what the council is doing to align the city's commercial offerings with the needs of its residents, saying that while the shops in Winchester serve tourists well, residents need to go outside the city to access national brands. Councillor Thompson added that Winchester has 99 national chains in the city centre, as well as a large independent sector. She added, "Our plans for central Winchester will allow our High Street to thrive. Every High Street is changing, especially with the internet shopping. Given these pressures, Winchester High Street is one of the best performing in the country, with only 5% vacancy rate and consistently high footfall. We need to celebrate this and do what we can to ensure this remains the case." Councillor Thompson went on to say that despite the controversy over the new parking charges introduced last year, the council has not seen any adverse effects on footfall in the city centre. She also added that the market contract is currently up for tender.
Tuning up for an evening of jazz, cabaret style, excuse me. On the third Thursday of every month, the Nutshell in King's Walk will host an evening of jazz. In partnership with Winchester Jazz Festival, the Nutshell Jazz Club will welcome some of the best musicians from across Europe. On Thursday, January the 18th, they will listen to the award-winning Alex Weston King Quartet, which consists of a tenor saxophonist, double bass, drums and a pianist. The event will start at 8 p.m. with doors opening at 7 p.m. and tickets cost £18. Proven Slice will be serving pizza at 7 p.m. from their van in the courtyard, which can be pre-ordered. These new evenings of jazz, food and drink in a cabaret-style setting will run until Thursday, May the 16th. If evenings are tricky because of childcare, the Nutshell will be offering a jazz box at 11:30 a.m. This is a jazz club suitable for adults and children from the age of 1 to 4, with a ticket price of £14.
Yep.
More than 1,000 native trees are planted across the countryside. Around 1,000 native saplings have been planted on Compton Down with the help of residents and volunteers. City and County Councillor Jan Warwick joined the Hampshire County Council countryside team to plant the trees along Hurdle Way. A mixture of native beech, field maple, hazel, yew, and disease-resistant elms were planted to restore the natural forest and support local wildlife. The countryside team will extend the hedgerow and also restore any gaps in the existing hedge. The saplings were carefully planted and protected from prevailing winds and from animals until they're established. Councillor Warwick said many trees suffering with ash dieback disease were removed from this area by contractors at the end of 2023. Residents were understandably concerned about the impact on local biodiversity and the natural environment. The Hampshire Countryside Team has produced a very thorough mitigation plan to help restore and improve this area. I am particularly grateful, said Councillor Warwick, and would like to say a very big thank you to the large number of countryside volunteers who joined local residents to plant so many trees.
Council voices concerns over hospital plans. Tisvelly Borough Council has agreed to voice its concerns over proposed changes to acute hospital services in and around Basingstoke and Winchester. Councillor Sandra Gidley proposed the motion for the Council to make representations to the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Integrated Care Board, outlining the longer travel times, downgrading of the Winchester A&D department, and the reduced birthing choices available. The plans are for a new specialist acute hospital on the edge of Basingstoke, using more than £800 million of government funding. Under the plans, the RHCH would be refurbished and a 24/7 urgent treatment centre opened. The maternity unit at the hospital would also be downgraded to be midwife-led. Option one is for the new hospital at the current site of Basingstoke Hospital in Aldermaston Road. However, this option would cost £948 million compared with £807 million for the preferred option two, to build a hospital at Junction 7 of the M3. A third option has also been added to the list, which is identical to option two other than having nurse-led rehabilitation beds at the current Basingstoke Hospital site. This is expected to cost £860 million. Councillor Gidley said the impact on Test Valley residents will mostly be as a result of the proposed changes to the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester. The main concern is the downgrading of the accident and emergency unit to a 24/7 doctor-led urgent treatment centre and same-day emergency care service.
Stroke survivor to tackle Kilimanjaro. A Winchester man has his sights on summiting Kilimanjaro after suffering a stroke whilst on holiday. Alan Orchard, 50, has started a petition to raise money for the Stroke Association and in the first 2 weeks raised over £1,000. He suffered an ischemic stroke in 2020 whilst in New Zealand and lost half his sight along with being temporarily paralysed on his left-hand side. He has made it his mission to make it as much money for the Stroke Association and to show others that life isn't finished after a stroke. Alan said, I just wanted to give something back if I could. I know a stroke is hard and an absolute nightmare for some people. It's that same old cliche, but it's so true. Just keeping a positive mental attitude will get you through it. The Stroke Association have been so good, and when I'm feeling down, it's nice to have someone to talk to who's been through the same things. With friends, they're very supportive, and been very supportive, although as much as they try, they will never fully understand what I've been going through. And I do tend to hide things when I'm struggling. And now that I've recently developed epilepsy as a consequence, the Stroke Association have totally helped by having open and honest conversations with me. In the summer, Alan of Parchment Street will be working with New Energy Fitness in Winchester Brook Centre, who will help him get started on a new cardio training programme, as well as training with an old school friend who is a former Royal Marine. where the pair are planning to take on numerous uphill challenges. Recently, Alan has been learning to support his body in an upright position and get used to performing some medial tasks again. Only within the last 3 to 4 months has Alan been able to walk without a stick and is starting to find his balance. With not being able to feel his left foot, these sessions and long walks up St. Catherine's Hill has allowed him to retrain his brain and legs. Alan said, "I've been walking as much as I can since the stroke, and I have had recovered all of by myself because of lockdown. I've been relearning how to scan and track as I lost vision on my left side, and sometimes I get exhausted and lose balance, but life is too short not to try. Another hurdle that presented itself was finding a medic to support Alan on his climb. So after staying in contact with the same medic, Roger Brocken, who brought him back from New Zealand, the pair are working together to organise the climb in Tanzania. Oh, I take my hat off to him. It sounds amazing.
Gold coin hoard sold. Hundreds of coins that were discovered in pillowcases and a sock during a routine house clearance have sold for more than £100,000. Hanson's auctioneers were carrying out the clearance at a house in Leicestershire when they found 331 gold coins while searching parts in the attic and a linen chest in the bedroom. The coins ranged from the 1800s to the 21st century, featuring monarchs including Queen Victoria, King George V, and of course Queen Elizabeth II. The collection went under the hammer at Hertfordshire Auction House, Hanson Ross, on January the 17th, with each coin valued between £300 and £500. Every single coin was sold for a combined £90,768, with a buyer's premium taking the total to £118,000. Auctioneer Charles Hanson said it was an amazing find, made after a client instructed us to clear a house. Our team is renowned for being thorough. We check over every inch of a house. It's not just about fine or fragile objects that are on display. It's hidden items that are often the most valuable. They're found in drawers, wardrobes, cupboards, bags, and in this case, even an old sock. People have a multitude of hiding places, and sometimes it's a case of hide and seek. In this case, the treasure was found in an attic and in a linen chest in a bedroom. And you can imagine the amazement of our staff. First they saw the glint of one gold coin, and then handfuls emerged, some hidden in a pillowcase and many others tucked away in a sock. Our client was flabbergasted and delighted in equal measure. They had no idea the house contained a treasure trove of gold. Mr. Hanson said the coins were in hot demand, sparking what is called a white glove sale, where every single lot was sold, adding, "It was like a walk through 300 years of history. The collection captured the passage of time, including all the different monarchs that were represented on the sovereigns, which reminded us of the length of some reigns. Due to their long periods on the throne, Victoria and Elizabeth's coin profiles alter through the decades."
Greek restaurant can open until 3 a.m. A city centre Greek restaurant has had its application to be open into the early hours granted. As previously reported, Yaya's Kitchen, Winchester, on St. George's Street, applied to add licensable activities which could be held on any day of the week from 11 p.m. to 3 a.m. the next day. At a licensing committee meeting, Yaya's owner and applicant Paul Pirigoudis said the business would be open only to serve takeaway food. He also confirmed the shop will not be offering sit-in dining during the expanded hours. He said it will be for food only. There will be no alcohol sales on the premises. We will move the tables and chairs to one side so people can't sit in. We will also make sure that the outside area is clear so people cannot wait there, and take any outside tables and chairs inside so they cannot be used. He continued, it will be one way for us to use the delivery channels to open up a new revenue. Mr. Pirigoudis said that he would ensure security industry authority licensed foot doormen will be employed to watch over the property during the late opening hours, saying he wants to make sure it is safe for his staff. Catherine Broadwood, director of the Cellar Toscanaccio in Parchment Street, objected to the application, citing fears that the expanded opening hours could lead to increased crime or disorderly behaviour. The committee approved the application with conditions that there would be no dine-in eating at the premises after 11 p.m. any night of the week, and that the business is only open on Sunday nights until 11 p.m. apart from on bank holidays. The decision was made at the licensing subcommittee on Friday, January the 19th.
Family Farm is hit by chronic water shortage. Residents and a herd of around 130 cows are still without water, more than 2 weeks on from when the problem first started. Despite the fault at the Eastern Supply Works being fixed, residents on Kingsworthy once again woke up to little or no water on Tuesday. Southern Water has said that this is a separate issue, with customers being impacted during the morning when there's a peak demand. Family Dairy Farm, Cross Valley Milk in Loveden Lane, relies on water and high pressure to look after more than 130 animals and produce milk. If the water stops in the middle of a pasteurising, the team must restart the entire process by washing through and repasteurising. Nikki Shergold, who looks after the business finances, said, "It's been really difficult. We're a very small family business and we can't afford problems like this. Stress is an understatement. We don't know what the situation is going to be every morning, and sometimes it's different for the depot, which is just down the track from the farm." Southern Water sent out automated messages, but you're left hang dry and not knowing what you're going to be doing. We're not sleeping. The impact is massive. Without water, the milk yield goes down, and so we struggle financially. My husband arrives in the mornings to pasteurise the milk, and they can't because there's no water. We contemplated sending staff home because we had no water and we didn't know when it would come back. We considered cancelling deliveries too, but we have a big elderly community who rely on our deliveries. The Worthies Ward councillor, Steve Cramerson, said, "We have had pockets of time with water over the weekend, but people have lost confidence now. They keep being told it's being fixed when there are obviously still issues. A lot of people in the Worthy community are suffering with no water and getting frustrated and angry. People need to know they can rely on their water supply." There was anger in parts of Winchester still affected. A resident of Sussex Street, who asked to remain anonymous, said, "I find it absolutely appalling. I don't understand why Southern Water is not doing anything. We were told that we would have our water back on Tuesday morning, but it's now Wednesday, January the 17th, and we still don't have anything. I just want answers." A spokesman for Southern Water said on Tuesday, "We are sorry customers in part of Kingsworthy are experiencing low pressure and temporary loss of supply during the morning peak demand. We have a team in the area investigating and underlying causes of this issue so we can resolve it as soon as possible." And there is a picture of husband and wife with their 5 children and a group of cows around them, and there was one brown cow who's looking very annoyed, and there's a black one who's looking very annoyed as well. So I should think they're feeling very put out.
City Bar and Cafe launches men's wellbeing workshops. A cafe and bar in Winchester city centre is launching a men's hub to help boost mental wellbeing. Cabinet Rooms in Jewellery Street is hosting three workshops with charity Beyond Equality to help men better support themselves and one another. The first session on Wednesday, January the 24th, Men and Mental Wellbeing, will explore what wellbeing means to participants and encourage self-reflection. The second section, Masculinities and Seeking Support, on Wednesday, January the 31st, will look at building support networks. And the final workshop, Men and Building Supportive Communities, on Wednesday, February the 7th, will discuss active listening and empathy. Participants are encouraged to sign up to all three sessions, with tickets costing £18, that's for all three workshops, and a free drink at each session. All of the sessions will be held from 6pm to 8pm at the Cabinet Rooms in Jewellery Street, and the workshops have been designed for men aged over 18. For more information or to book, there is a thing online that you can look up. tickettailor.com/events/cabinet-rooms/1082281. Sorry about that.
Local Bobby Scheme launched. Named and contactable police officers for every area have been announced by Hampshire Police and Crime Commissioner. Donna Jones said that the public's call for greater police visibility have been answered by the named local Bobby scheme in Hampshire and Isle of Wight. The scheme means anyone can find out their local Bobby's details, including email and direct mobile number, making them more accessible. For Winchester, PC Thomas Harries will be patrolling St Paul's Ward, and in the west of the city, and PC Will Andrews will be around Oliver's Battery and Badger Farm. These are just two of the 99 officers that have been assigned to the communities, with some areas covered by more than one. Miss Jones said, "I was convinced very quickly that bringing back local named police officers to serve you and your communities was the right thing to do. This new scheme will ensure people know who to contact about safety and crime concerns. It will also provide ample opportunities for the community to share information and intelligence easily. The local Bobby scheme will span the two counties and provide every community, whether the area is urban or rural. To find out who your local Bobby is, visit hampshirealert.co.uk/content/all local areas, and I'm sure somebody will be kind enough to help you so that you can install the number into your own phones."
Watercress Festival returning to Market Town. The annual Arlesford Watercress Festival will be returning to celebrate its 20th anniversary. Taking place on Sunday, May the 19th, the event will feature dozens of popular returning attractions. This includes the crowning of the watercress king and queen, followed by the dispersal of fresh new season watercress to the crowds, cookery demos by celebrity chefs, live entertainment, food stalls, craft stalls, and the World Watercress Eating Championships. Watercress Festival organisers have also said that there will be few new surprise attractions to help celebrate the 20th anniversary. Watercress is grown in natural spring water, which bubbles up from underground aquifers, mainly in the Hampshire and Dorset. Also, it is known as the capital of watercress due to the role it's played in the growing and transportation of fresh watercress by train to the fresh produce markets of North and London.
And that's all we have for you this week. Please return the memory stick in the plastic wallet as soon as you've finished with it. Thanks to this week's editors and to all the other volunteers who prepare, copy and dispatch our free recordings to you. Goodbye from us, Heather.
Goodbye.
Richard.
Goodbye.
Norma.
Goodbye.
And me, Noel Thorpe-Tracy. I hope you stay safe and warm.